Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today is part 2 of our history of narcolepsy. And in the first episode, we talked about what narcolepsy is and when it was first written about, at least in the Western record, and of the work that was being done by German psychiatrist Carl Friedrich Otto Westphal in the late 1870s. And as we left off, Westphal was really kind of onto the idea that he was that what he was seeing in these two particular cases that he talked about might actually be a unique condition and not something that could be lumped under an existing diagnosis. And today we're going to pick up with the next big step in the history of narcolepsy.
So Jean-Baptiste Edouard Gélinot is always mentioned in articles about narcolepsy in history because he coined the term. He did so right out of the gate in his article on narcolepsy, which first appeared in the Gazette of the Civil and Military Hospitals of the Ottoman Empire. Gélinot was born in 1828 in Bordeaux in the south of France, and he served as a Navy physician and made a name for himself as a military surgeon. Through his studies of tropical diseases while traveling aboard ships in the Indian Ocean.
And one of the other notable things that he did in his medical career was that he introduced the use of arsenic bromide tablets to treat epilepsy. He also helped to set up an insurance system for physicians of advanced age, and he wrote extensively on medical topics ranging from postpartum psychosis to deafness for various publications, and he also founded a mineral waters and health spa society.
In an interesting bit of crossover, he cited the work of Westphal in an article about agoraphobia in 1880, which is the same year that Gélinot appeared on the narcolepsy timeline. We don't know if the two men ever had direct communications with one another, although they were working on some similar areas of medicine. This was all happening right after Germany had been unified by Otto von Bismarck, and France and Germany were not exactly super chatty at this point.
Yeah, so we really don't know if they ever had contact, even though, as we said, he cited some of the other man's work, and they were working in similar areas, but those were areas that were kind of exciting throughout the medical community, so there were many people working on them. In Gélinot's writing on narcolepsy, he offers up a case of a barrel seller called Mr. G, and he is age 38, and this man experienced up to 200 incidents each day of uncontrollable sleep, lasting 1 to 5 minutes each.
And even a 30-minute discussion would be consistently interrupted by sleep attacks. I think Gélinot mentions in his writing that the longest he was ever able to witness Mr. G going without an attack was about 30 minutes. The patient had grown dependent on his 13-year-old son to stay with him at all times so that the son could wake him when he dropped off unexpectedly.
Mr. G had no history of convulsions, no other medical issues that would explain this condition that he presented himself with before Gélinot on February 15th of 1879.
Yeah, he had, you know, he wasn't completely free of medical issues, but none of them could have been attributed to this. Mr. G had been in a violent fight 3 years before his contact with Dr. Gélinot. And after the fight, he had been arrested and imprisoned. Not long after that, a log actually fell on his head, but he had continued his life with no apparent consequences of these two events for quite some time.
However, about a year after the log incident, Mr. G began to experience a loss of muscular tone in his legs when he was laughing aloud or when he became excited because of a good business deal. He started to notice that he would become paralyzed when playing cards if he was dealt a particularly good hand, and then he would drop off to sleep for about a minute.
And that's how it began, but his condition progressed pretty rapidly, and soon the slightest excitation would send Mr. G into a sleep attack. He tried to ward these sleep attacks off to no avail, and he, as anyone else who deals with narcolepsy, had no control over when his body would just fall into a stupor. Even something as simple as seeing happy children and families at play in the park, he would have this moment of delight, and then it would drop him off to sleep. The more intense his emotions, whether it was one of delight or one of pain or anger, the more rapid and intense his sleep attack.
The attacks that came upon him when he was very angry were less frequent, but his sleep became deeper and lasted longer.
Yeah, so it seems like happiness was a little bit more of a trigger than anger, but the anger ones were a little bit more intense in terms of episodes. Mr. G had already been diagnosed as having a seizure disorder, but none of the treatments that were issued for it did any good. He really didn't think that was what he had. The patient reported no pain associated with his sleep attacks, merely a feeling of deep heaviness and the sensation of his mind being empty. And you may recall that was one of the primary descriptions, the sense of empty-mindedness of Westfall's primary patient in his study. And Mr. G could hear and he was conscious despite this apparent stupor right up until the moment where he truly fell asleep, although that sleep only lasted a very brief time.
Working alone proved to be better for Mr. G than working with a colleague because he enjoyed the company of other people and he would become very animated while he was talking to them. That would trigger a sleep episode.
Yeah, while I was reading these notes and I was reading a translation of Gélinot's work on the subject, I became sort of heartbroken. Like, can you imagine every time you experience laughter or delight, you kind of check out for a second? It's sort of a rough thing to think about. Gélinot referred to Mr. G's cataplexy in his writing as astasia. And while his patient experienced it, he did not experience hallucinations, allegedly. We're coming around to this. And was able to sleep through the night. He woke, he reported, just once a night on average. However, there is some contradictory stuff going on here. Because Mr. G also claimed that his infant child, he had a 13-year-old son, but he also had a son that was just a baby still. And he claimed that this child had been conceived, quote, in a moment when the illness came over him. And this particular statement in Gélinot's writing has been puzzling sleep researchers for quite some time. So it might indicate that the man was actually having a hypnagogic hallucination. So a hallucination as he fell into sleep. Or he was experiencing vivid dreams and dreamt the event. However, it may also indicate that he had a sleep attack immediately after having sex with his wife, or that he had an episode of cataplexy before or after the sexual encounter, and that this is the thing that he remembers. So that's one of those things that crops up and it doesn't quite fit with the general picture. It's been talked about a lot and discussed in the medical community and amongst those that do sleep studies specifically, but it kind of stays a mystery.
So before we get into how Gélinot tried to categorize Mr. G's condition, let's have a brief word from a sponsor. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the Michael Thura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Gelino puzzles in his writing as to whether this is a condition that should be grouped in an already recognized neurosis group, or if it deserves its own definition. And while he relays the notes and diagnosis of Mr. G's previous physician, this is the one that diagnosed him with epilepsy, he is not at all convinced that the epilepsy diagnosis holds water. He points out that while some of the symptoms do overlap, as we talked about in our last episode, part of the problem with narcolepsy diagnosis is that all sleep disorders have a lot of overlap. And at this point in history, a lot of things got lumped under epilepsy that really were not ideally supposed to be there. But he points out that Mr. G had never actually had a seizure. It seemed like the previous doctor was noting that he was falling down in these moments of cataplexy, and he was attributing that to a seizure rather than this sort of loss of muscle control. Gelinot's article also compares Mr. G's condition to kinophobia, which is a fear of open spaces, to sleeping dropsy, which was talked about a lot in the time, and vertigo. And he finds all of them equally unsuitable as labels for this pattern of paralysis and sleep that his patient was exhibiting.
Gelinot dismissed the idea that Mr. G's condition was the result of that conk on the head we talked about earlier. Instead, he offers the theory that his nerve centers didn't get enough oxygen or that the oxygen supply was being depleted too rapidly. So according to this theory, his body was just in a constant cycle of seeking restorative sleep.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. Modern science doesn't hold that out, but he was really trying to explore some previously undiscovered territory in terms of finding out why this would happen to a person. To treat Mr. G, Gelinot initially prescribed picrotoxin, and this is a stimulant that's derived from woody vines. Stimulants continue to be part of the treatment for a lot of people with narcolepsy and other sleep disorders. And the idea was that this picrotoxin would prevent spasmodic contraction of the blood vessels. He also added bromides, which were used as sedatives, and unfortunately, this course of treatment had no positive effect on the patient whatsoever, and it actually made him feel weaker.
The next approach was the inhalation of amyl nitrate to dilate the blood vessels whenever Mr. G felt an attack coming on. This, too, failed to curtail any of his sleep attacks. Similarly, apomorphine injections, strychnine arsenate, phosphates, and caffeine were all failures.
Yeah, you know, some would initially appear like they might be helping. And it's funny because in the description, he talks about whenever Mr. G inhales the amyl nitrate, his cheeks flush. And so they think like it might be doing some good, but no. Gelinot did not differentiate between narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy, because in his patient, there was always cataplexy. Although today, those two conditions are diagnosed differently. And while Gelinot touched on and ultimately dismissed in Mr. G's case the possibility of an injury being the cause of such a condition, it would be some time before narcolepsy would be distinguished into two types. Primary narcolepsy, which is when the cause of the condition is unknown and it seems to exist on its own as a neurological condition. And then secondary narcolepsy, characterized by the presence of an underlying neurological condition or a traumatic brain injury.
So both the Westfall and Gelinot cases have a lot of factors in common.
Neither of them, however, include discussion of automatic behavior. So those are those instances where patients go on with the tasks that they had been partaking in or doing even during episodes of sleep attacks, like continuing to write even after they've dropped off.
One of the important aspects of Gelinot's work was his observation that episodes of sleep were often linked to or catalyzed by moments of extreme emotional response. And while Westfall seems to have been observing similar triggers for cataplexy, he mentions things like the patient seeing two boys fighting or excitation as bringing on cataplexy, he isn't as detailed. And as we mentioned before, he seems to think that the sleep instances are the result or extension of the muscle weakness.
But the truly important development is that these two prominent doctors, and there were others writing, but these are the two that really kind of cemented this, they had now written about patients with what appeared to be really similar conditions. And so narcolepsy started to really be looked at a little more seriously. But unfortunately, as it gained recognition as a sleep disorder, many sleep issues involving daytime drowsiness were then incorrectly lumped together under the diagnosis of narcolepsy.
While there was certainly some work being done in the field of narcolepsy in the early 20th century, cataplexy was given its name in 1902, for example. It wasn't until the encephalitis lethargica outbreak that started in 1917 that it really got a lot of attention. We have a whole episode on encephalitis lethargica. that is extremely scary, so we won't go into more detail about it here.
Yeah, Tracy did the research on the encephalitis lethargica episode, and it was very, very frightening stuff.
It was an accidental Halloween episode. It was not supposed to be scary stuff for Halloween.
But it's very scary to think about and to talk about. But just as we said, many sleep disorders were incorrectly being diagnosed as narcolepsy. And this was sometimes a problem with encephalitis lethargica, particularly in the beginning of its appearance. Although there were cases of encephalitis lethargica where the narcolepsy diagnosis was legit. And this actually caused some doctors to debate whether or not there were truly any cases of idiopathic narcolepsy, or if it really was just always linked to another problem that just wasn't always easily identified.
In 1930, psychiatrist Konstantin von Economo, who I think we talk about in that encephalitis lethargica episode, identified the posterior hypothalamus as the region of the brain that was critical in wakefulness. He proposed that a lesion or disease of the posterior hypothalamus was a probable primary cause of narcolepsy.
And as interest in sleep science grew, many treatments for narcolepsy were devised and attempted. Enterical injection of air, so that's air pumped into the space under the arachnoid membranes of the brain or spinal cord, was tried. Removal of cerebrospinal fluid and radiation of the hypothalamic region, those were all attempted to try to treat narcolepsy. None really effective.
In the pharmaceutical realm, ephedrine sometimes offered marginal help, but in 1935, amphetamines were introduced as a treatment. These had and continue to have a significant effect in the way of reducing drowsiness, but there are a lot of side effects and they can be addictive. Tricyclic antidepressants have also been effective, and in many cases, doctors use a combination of antidepressants and stimulants to manage patient care.
And then before we get to what is maybe the most fascinating part of narcolepsy history, at least for me, should we take a moment to thank one of our sponsors?
Sure. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so now we're getting into the middle of the 20th century where some really interesting stuff starts to happen. Starting in 1964, Dr. William Dement, who is the father of modern sleep science and is still going, he's in his 80s now, opened a sleep clinic at Stanford. And there, intensive study of the causes and patterns of narcolepsy was conducted. The sleep center actually became permanently established a little over 5 years later in 1970.
This is also where canine narcolepsy enters the picture. The first case of a dog with narcolepsy was identified in 1973. The dog, a toy poodle named Monique, had begun having cataplectic attacks as an adolescent puppy. In some cases, Monique would experience only partial cataplexy, and for example, only her legs would go limp. But at other times, she experienced a full collapse.
And just as was the case with Westfall and Gelinot's patients, excitement would trigger Monique. A new toy or food or a treat could prompt an episode of cataplexy.
In the years after Monique was identified, Dr. Dement traveled to veterinary schools and met with veterinarians to discuss the condition and identify canines who had it.
And so eventually a canine narcolepsy colony was actually founded as part of the Stanford lab so that researchers could start a breeding program to study the role of heredity in narcolepsy. However, initially, all of the puppies produced by this program were asymptomatic. Researchers were unable to identify a hereditary component.
15 different breeds of dog were identified with canine narcolepsy with cataplexy over the years, and two breeds, Doberman Pinschers and Labrador Retrievers, were found to actually transfer the condition genetically. So with this discovery, it was revealed that there are both sporadic, which is non-hereditary, random occurrences, and familial or hereditary versions of canine narcolepsy.
And while there have been numerous developments in the study of narcolepsy, and some have been quite recent, one of the biggest then happened in 1999, and it started with this ongoing study of the condition in dogs, as well as in mice, because they will also exhibit narcolepsy. And at that point in 1999, hypocretin receptor mutations were identified as the cause of narcolepsy in dogs.
Hypocretin is a brain chemical that regulates sleep and wakefulness. So abnormal levels of hypocretin, so too much or too little, can cause all kinds of havoc on the sleep cycle system.
And the following year, so in 2000, so we're getting quite recent, human narcolepsy was also associated with a deficiency in hypocretin. And while there's ongoing research as to why hypocretin-producing cells are lost why they, you know, shut down. One area that's being explored is that it could potentially be caused by an autoimmune reaction.
Surprisingly, narcolepsy and narcolepsy with cataplexy weren't acknowledged as discrete clinical disorders until the publication of the 2001 International Classification of Sleep Disorders.
Yeah, it's still in some ways such a new thing. And I'm forever fascinated by it. Part of it is that I've had two friends in my life that have narcolepsy. The real deal, by which I do not mean, I think some people will joke in social circles about, oh yeah, my friend has narcolepsy because they tend to fall asleep a lot. But once you have seen someone actually be in the middle of talking to you and just be out, and then 40 seconds later, they just start talking again and they're awake and it's like it never happened. It is very fascinating, and you realize that this is a very unique condition and it is not just being sleepy and tired.
Right.
There are also, and we'll link to them in the show notes. I have them listed in the sources. There are videos of animals experiencing narcolepsy, which if you're an animal person, it can be a little bit hard to watch initially because you see like these, you know, a dog running around and then suddenly like just losing control of its legs. And it looks very upsetting and frightening. The dogs seem to generally not be too distraught by the whole situation. but it's fascinating to watch. And I think if you watch just a moment or two of those kinds of films, you'll see pretty quickly that, again, this is not just a case of someone being sleepy or nodding off. It's not like when you doze off in a meeting because your brain is not getting stimulation. It's really like, it's like a switch being flipped in many cases.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm fascinated by it. Like I said, I'm fascinated by all the sleep things. I also have a little bit of listener mail.
To read it for us.
I will. This is more listener mail about our Gaudi podcast. So these are actually two pieces. One is from our listener, Kristen, and she says, I started listening to your podcast on the way from Seattle to Nebraska for the holidays. That is a 22-hour drive, she says, and she had lots of time for podcasts. But when I saw the most recent podcast were on Antoni Gaudi, I had to listen to them. He's been one of my favorite artists, not just architects, for a long time. It was a major reason why I wanted to visit Barcelona. I think you both did an amazing job going over his life and work, especially his death, not to be morbid. It's an important detail of his life, and it's one that's sometimes overlooked. There were a couple of points that weren't touched on and might be of interest to listeners who are ever in Barcelona. One is that the sidewalk tiles in some places around Barcelona were designed by Gaudi. They have a pattern that looks like fossils, and it's quite beautiful. Images can be found by Googling Gaudi sidewalk tiles. I'm sure you've seen some pictures of them. Also, on the roof of Casa Mila, there is a small archway that Gaudi designed to frame the then-unfinished Sagrada Familia. He put an immense amount of effort into all of his work, even connecting them like this, which I find to be incredibly impressive. And she includes a picture of it. I did not know either of those things. I remember seeing in some of my image searches some of the sidewalk tiles, but I presumed, perhaps foolishly, because I didn't see any write-up about them being specifically designed by him for parts of Barcelona. Like, I thought they were probably just the pieces that were outside of the buildings that he had designed, but apparently they are out and about. And the other one is, I won't read the whole email, but it is from our listener, Scott, and he mentions to us that just after the Gaudi podcast aired, and this was complete accident on our part, there was an article about a chapel being built in Chile based upon the designs of Gaudi. And it's going to be the first Gaudi-designed building outside of his native Spain. And he includes a link to the article, which we will also put in the show notes. He says, I love it when something I just learned about makes the news at the same time. I do too, especially when it happens accidentally. And we look like we're really timely. But that was an absolute accident. So hooray for happy accidents. If you would like to write us, talk to us about sleep disorders or architects or whatever else delights you, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also connect with us at Missed in History on Twitter, at facebook.com/missedinhistory, at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, on pinterest.com/missedinhistory, and if you would like to purchase some Missed in History goodies like shirts and tote bags and other fun things, you can do that at our Spreadshirt store, which is missedinhistory.spreadshirt.com. If you'd like to research a little bit about what we talked about today, you can go to our parent site, House of Works, type in the word narcolepsy in the search bar. You'll get an article called What is Narcolepsy? And I mentioned this one in the second of our episodes because the timeline there is not quite the same as the one that I mentioned. They kind of pick up with Gelinot as the start of really the record of it. Because that really is when it came into being as the word narcolepsy. So have a peek at that article if you like. You can also visit us at mistinhistory.com for all of our episodes, show notes, etc. We encourage you to do so. And if you would like to do research on almost anything you can think of, you can do that at our parent site, howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.